Hey guys, welcome back to Take 10. I'm Aiden, and joining me once again today is Matt. Today we're going to be debriefing some of the biggest moments and storylines from the NBA's restart as it wraps up a very successful run.
Thanks, Aiden. Really super stoked to get into this. The NBA restart really has been nothing short of spectacular. I mean, the logistics, the games, the stories, it's really been A+ on the league's part, in my opinion.
Totally with you on that. When I saw that bubble plan, I was definitely a little bit skeptical. You know, they're going to build a bubble in Disneyland. But the NBA put such a huge emphasis on player health and safety. They really set the precedent for what it looks like when a major league wants to return to play during a pandemic. And they've really laid out a great blueprint that I really hope other leagues can really follow.
Oh, I mean, definitely for sure. What really shocked me was the quality of play. I mean, it really didn't diminish at all. I was definitely worried coming into the bubble that the quality of play wouldn't be the same as it was prior to the coronavirus. And injuries didn't even play that big of a factor as some feared. And just the entire presentation of the bubble was fantastic. I thought the courts and those high-tech screens in the background, all those virtual fans, were really cool. And really, the TV watching experience didn't really suffer as much as I thought it would. I still enjoyed watching those games from my couch in July and August.
You know, in terms of diminishing play, I completely agree with you, except for one point, and that would be the entire Milwaukee Bucks. Their quality of play definitely diminished a little bit. But, you know, it was really kind of a brand new season, and that was a fun dynamic to dig into. And really, the whole dynamic of these seeding games and the play-in tournament that we got, that was all so entertaining. I mean, we got playoff basketball before the playoffs even officially began. We got to see Damian Lillard and Ja Morant go toe-to-toe with some really clutch moments over that first weekend when the Blazers and the Grizzlies got to match up for like a tiebreaker game. And that was really just such a treat to watch. And the play-ins really showed that the NBA has this versatility, this adaptability, and this really like forward-thinking kind of management right now. And I really have a ton of faith in them as they continue to navigate the issue of playing sports during a pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, and the playoffs were unbelievable. I mean, there was so much fantastic drama that went on. I mean, we had 14 eliminated teams that didn't make the finals, and yet we still have so much to think about them going into the offseason. In a lot of ways, these teams that lost out before the finals are far more interesting to talk about because they're flawed, right? They have many ways they can improve. A lot of players under scrutiny that we have to talk about. And a lot of coaches being fired, being hired. A lot of carousel talk going on in the NBA right now. So let's just dive into it. In order of worst seeds in the 2020 playoffs, the best. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Yeah. All right. So first on our list is going to be the Orlando Magic. So the Magic were really more of a placeholder team in the shallow, top-heavy Eastern Conference. I mean, sure, Vucevic, he looked like a quality number one option. I'd gladly have him on my team. But Milwaukee never really felt a challenge here. I mean, this organization in Orlando really kind of feels stuck in the mud. They're locked into this really mediocre-looking roster moving forward. I mean, how many players on the Orlando Magic can you really name, right? Like, I really want to see this team make some bold free agency moves or some really splashy trades. And Orlando isn't really the type of place to attract marquee free agents. So I'd really love for them to actually go after one of those big names that's on the trade block this year, like Bradley Beal or Devin Booker. Otherwise, I can't really expect anything but more of the same when we get into the 2021 season.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. The Magic are kind of that mediocre team that everyone knows is going to get that 7 or 8 seed and then really just fall throughout in 4 or 5 games in the first round. But like you said, I can really envision seeing Bradley Beal on that team next year. I'm a big Bradley Beal fan myself. Hopefully they're able to attract him, but really, they're not looking too good next year.
So moving on, we're going to talk about the Portland Trail Blazers, and they have been an awesome story in the bubble. I mean, Damian Lillard really has cemented his status as a top 5 player in this league. I mean, he was unbelievable in the bubble. He really carried this lackluster squad. I mean, I am high on CJ McCollum, and I think that the Blazers have a really good core, Carmelo Anthony and a good bench, but they just couldn't back him up in the postseason, and things fell apart very quickly. They really need to add some more talent if they really want to hang around in this juggernaut of a West. And they really need a stronger defensive presence. I mean, look, Damian Lillard's a great offensive player, but he's pretty mediocre on the back end, so they really need someone who is a great defensive-minded player in order to propel them up to the top four of the West.
I'm definitely with you there. I mean, it was really cool to see the resurgence of Carmelo Anthony on that team, too. That was just kind of a great feel-good story. I mean, that man throughout the entire 2020 season completely deserved to be on a roster. So that was great to see. But yeah, outside of that, and obviously Damian Lillard just going nuclear in these playoffs, I mean, there really isn't much to say about this team. They just need to add more pieces. They need to build around that backcourt of Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. And, you know, given the price tag on both of those guys, I just don't see this team really getting much better than maybe from 2 years ago when they went to the Western Conference Finals only to get swept by the Warriors sans Kevin Durant. All right, so next team we're going to dig into is the Brooklyn Nets. So this was obviously more of a test flight year. I mean, KD and Kyrie, they were waiting in the wings the whole time. I mean, Kyrie Irving peaced out midseason with an injury. But, you know, there's still some stuff to like here. I mean, Caris LeVert, he impressed me so much. And I expect him to be an unquestioned number three scoring option moving forward. But a bunch of these other guys, I can't really say anything about them. I can't say much about this team because their window to go to a championship really begins next year. And I'm going to have so much fun watching them. I mean, I love watching Kevin Durant. Kyrie Irving is awesome. And that left field hire of Steve Nash at head coach, oh my gosh, that's going to be insane.
I mean, listen, I agree that KD and Kyrie are some of the top players in the NBA, but they're actually my two most hated players in the NBA. I just don't like them. Don't like them as players. But I think that next year the Nets are going to really pop off with KD and Kyrie. I really think that people are saying that KD and Kyrie aren't going to blend together, but I really think that their playing style is able to, I don't know, I think the Brooklyn Nets are going to be good next year. I think they're not going to be as good as people think they will be, but I think they're going to be a lot better than what they were this year. Moving on now, back to the West, we're going to talk about the Dallas Mavericks, who, listen, Luka Doncic has finally arrived. I mean, he just popped off this season, before the bubble and in the bubble. He really looks like a bona fide young star, especially with that insane buzzer beater against the Clippers. I mean, what a shot.
I was shouting at my TV at that one.
My God. I mean, Luka Doncic really has that clutch factor that the Mavericks really needed. He has that spark that Dallas team was waiting for so many years. But they really need more consistency from Kristaps Porzingis. And they need that number three option still, right? I mean, Porzingis and Doncic have a great 1-2 punch for the Mavericks, but they really need that number three option if they want to, you know, compete with the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Nuggets. But Luka is still going to get so much better next season. He got so much experience in these playoffs. He was the number one scorer against some great teams. And for the West team, I would be terrified of the Mavericks. They have their number one guy. Kristaps Porzingis is still playing very well, even if he's inconsistent over the this season. But they need those next steps, and they need to be really careful with these next steps, and they need to intentionally build around Luka if they want to propel into the top three of the West.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that one. I mean, I kind of see them following a mold from the Denver Nuggets over the past few years, where they were a young team two playoffs ago when they were facing off against Portland in the finals and or not in the Western Conference playoffs and everything. You know, the Mavericks, they've got the same 1-2 punch that that Denver has, and now the Mavericks kind of got that experience. They got beaten by a better opponent with just a lot more talent. They just couldn't keep up. Now that young core has the experience moving forward. And yeah, I think they're just a piece or two away from being a fixture in the Western Conference for years to come. And, you know, Luka, he's just going to keep them competitive in any game, any given night of the week. All right, so next we're going to go into the 76ers, the Philadelphia 76ers. Let me just say, the process is dead. I feel like I can really say that with confidence now. It's clear that this all-in year from Philly just didn't pan out, especially given the fact that they left in the first round. This roster just hasn't fit well together. Their three best players are Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and Al Horford, and they just clash too much in terms of their skill sets. And, you know, they brought on Doc Rivers. I like that hire in a vacuum. But I think they really need to retool their roster with a big trade to bring in some more shooting and some more playmaking. A fan has to ask, though, how many more of these quote-unquote big trades can this team do before they're completely gutted of their depth and their draft picks. You know, they're just going to have like four superstars and then a bench of like replacement players if they pull off some of these trades. And they're just out of ammo from that that trust the process Sam Presti era.
Yeah, I truly feel bad for 76ers fans. I mean, this year felt like the 76ers were ready for that next step in the playoffs. And they just got their butts whooped by the Celtics in the first round. I mean, Joel Embiid is an all-NBA player. I will not agree with that. I think Ben Simmons is a great player too. Not a great shooter, obviously, that is well known. But their other stars, Tobias Harris, Al Horford, just did not pan out this year. And firing Brett Brown was probably the right step into another direction that this organization wants to take. I think Doc Rivers is a great coach, but Philly still needs a lot more work if they want to compete with the Bucks, the Raptors, the Celtics, and all those teams from the West. So I don't really see a championship anytime soon for the 76ers. Hmm. Next up, let's move on here. Let's go to the Utah Jazz, who were basically the team that forced the postponement of the NBA back in March. And they were a massive talking point over the entire quarantine period about how they're going to gel back together after their team chemistry being ruined by the coronavirus and Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell clashing all over quarantine. But they quickly rallied and pieced together a really good series against the Nuggets before Jamal Murray just took over the series. I mean, even when Donovan Mitchell just went off in seven games and – you know, even Rudy Gobert playing well in the back, I just thought that Jamal Murray took over this series. And for the Jazz going into the offseason, their biggest headline is just a massive rookie extension for Donovan Mitchell. I really think that he deserves it. He is a great player. He really showed off in the bubble, really showed his talent. And another big question for the Jazz is how they're going to deal with their chemistry. Is Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell's relationship really mended right now? Like, are they, you know, are they going to be able to play on the court next season for all 82 games? And will this increase the ceiling for this roster? I mean, there's so many questions the Jazz have heading into the offseason. I really think that they can take that next step into a super team, but they really got to come into the offseason focused on team chemistry and the extension for Donovan Mitchell.
You know, I just don't see this team having that super team label anytime soon, you know? They've got to find a way to keep Donovan Mitchell, keep Rudy Gobert, and then add like a big name, like top 20 player to that roster. That's the only way I can really see myself ever picking this team as a finals contender. You know, they've got that great defense, but Donovan Mitchell, he's carrying too much of the load. They're putting so much pressure on him. And I mean, he's doing well, but this guy's still so young. You need to get that man some help or else he's just going to walk out the door. You're going to have to rebuild, trade him away, and it's just going to be a heartbreaking thing because he is just such a fantastic player for the Jazz, and I really want to see Mitchell succeed. Hey guys, my name is Aiden Harrod, and I'm a writer, editor, and podcaster at the Tufts Daily. As a junior who's been on the Daily since the fall of 2018, I've been able to see firsthand the work that students put into this paper. And that's why the quality of the work is so freaking good. The best way for you to support that work is to engage with it. Subscribe to our podcast, submit an op-ed, and be sure to check out all the other excellent content at www.tuftsdaily.com. Thanks, guys. Now back to the show. All right, now we're going to get into the Oklahoma City Thunder. So Chris Paul, after seemingly falling off the face of the planet, led the Thunder to a seven-game seesaw series against the Houston Rockets in the first round. And, you know, after falling just short of reaching the second round, the Thunder, they still managed to churn out some really impressive victories on the backs of Chris Paul and their role players that they had. They've got such a savvy front office, and it'll be really interesting to see how they handle this really bizarre offseason that's coming up. You know, they have so many picks, like an absurd amount of picks from that Chris Paul trade. They could easily swing some big trades to contend with this roster they have right now. Or they could stay the course, maybe get a nice haul for Chris Paul, and start this absolute eight-dimensional rebuild with, God, I don't even know. I don't have the number of how many picks these guys have, but it's an absurd number, and they could really, really trust the process if they wanted to.
Yeah, so back to your point about the series against the Rockets, I really thought the Rockets were going to come out and really steamroll the Thunder. I thought they had a great regular season, a great bubble. But Chris Paul looks so good in that series. He's a great veteran leader. I was so surprised by the Thunder over the playoffs, or the first round, really. And I really think that they could be good next season again. I think that they can take these draft picks that they have, you know, develop some rookies, have Chris Paul still be that leader of the team, develop some of their young guys in their bench. I really think the Thunder have the pieces to be another playoff team next year. I don't think they're going to be a contender. They really don't have the best players. They have great players, but they're more role players and superstars. But I think the Thunder can make the playoffs again next year. So moving on to another team similar to the Thunder, in my opinion, and that's the Indiana Pacers, who are always just kind of there, right? They're that team that who just needs that one more piece to become elite, yet that piece just never, ever, ever falls in the right place. Especially this season when they disappointed against the Heat in the first round of the bubble, and then they fired Coach Nate McMillan right after. I mean, that was the right move. I mean, the Pacers looked awful against the Heat. I mean, props to the Heat, they're playing very well in the bubble right now, but the Pacers really just did not put up a fight at all. And the Pacers, they need Oladipo to bounce back. They really do. I think that's the number one concern for them is Oladipo to come back from that injury he had a few years back. And they need that high production from TJ Warren and in order to reach championship contention. I think one of the biggest questions they have is, can Oladipo not get hurt right before the playoffs start next season? I think that Oladipo is a big piece for the Pacers. If they want to, you know, make a small run in the playoffs, they need Oladipo to be healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the movie title that I would give to this team is Groundhog Day, honestly. They keep having the same exact season over and over. You know, internal improvements, savvy fringe moves. They have a great regular season, and then Oladipo gets hurt or some important piece gets hurt, and all of a sudden they just fall apart. They make the playoffs, but they're just an easy first round exit. And honestly, I don't really know, like, they can't blow it up. Like, Oladipo coming back, TJ Warren, Domantas Sabonis, those guys are going to be good. That's a great core, but I just don't really see this team making it past the second round anytime soon, especially because they're not one of those Eastern Conference juggernauts with an insane amount of riches and talent on their hands, you know? They're kind of that second tier, and in the Eastern Conference, second tier is almost a death sentence, really. All right, now we're going to get into the Houston Rockets. So currently, at the time of this recording, not with a head coach, and the Rockets are heading into this offseason with really limited cap space to work with. In addition, they need to get these extensions done for their all-stars and James Harden and Russell Westbrook, and it'll be interesting to see how they really maneuver their money. You know, if I were them, and I'm no GM or anything, but I would definitely get a defensive-minded player or two through a trade. I would build around Harden and Westbrook with some scrappy veterans, all right? And maybe don't commit to small ball like that again. Obviously, the Lakers' size just eviscerated them in the second round, and you need to really complement these scorers and figure out how to most efficiently make James Harden and Russell Westbrook look good together on offense.
Yeah, and I really don't love their small ball approach that they had this year. Like you said, the Lakers just rolled over them in the second round because they just had so much size over them. You know, I love James Harden. I love Russell Westbrook. They really blend together sort of well. I think they really need a defensive-minded coach. They need a defensive-minded player. They need those scrappy players, like you said, because their defense is atrocious. It is. And defense does win championships, believe it or not, in the NBA. And if they have that one defensive-minded player on the starting five or on the bench that down the stretch can get them some key stops and some key rebounds, I think that the Rockets can be a great team, and they might be able to win a championship down the line. But the first thing they need is that defensive player. Now, moving on to my Boston Celtics, who once again has drawn me in to thinking that they're going to be on this amazing playoff run, make the finals, maybe steal an underdog victory like the Raptors did last year. And they just crushed my heart. I mean, they just simply ran. All good. They just simply ran out of the gas against the Heat. And, oh, God, their fourth quarter play was just atrocious. I mean, they just could not close out games. And they need to realize that their championship window is closing quicker and quicker after each season. I mean, they got to realize they cannot keep Tatum, Brown, Walker on the same team for the rest of their prime, right? One of them is going to leave eventually. They're going to have to sign them to extensions. And in order to make that another playoff run, they need to get a stretch five, someone who is able to score points, shoot threes, but also play defense. I mean, I was so frustrated with Daniel Tice in the playoffs. He's an okay player. He is. But I don't think he's good enough to really solidify that center position. And Ines Cantor and Robert Williams III are good players too, but they have two different types of games that don't blend together well with the rest of the starting five. And we also need a depth veteran who knows how to close out playoff games. I'm looking at Andre Iguodala on the Heat right now, who is a very vital piece in the behind the scenes, who is really helping these rookies play in these playoff games. I really think that we need a depth veteran in the offseason.
Yeah, you know, I was watching a lot of Boston Celtics this year in the playoffs, and you know, like everyone was saying, Jason Tatum, he took that step, he's a superstar. But I saw him come up a little short in some pretty key moments. You know, I saw him pass a ball directly to the sidelines because Nick Nurse happened to be dressed in green and was standing a little too close to the edge. I think Tatum isn't all the way there, in my opinion. And that's just from a casual viewer's perspective. You know, I am not fully dialed into the Celtics like you are, but I still think you need to let Tatum and Brown develop a little bit more. And I think you need more magic from Cardiac Kemba. I mean, you need those clutch shots. You need those clutch plays from him. You need to make sure he's on 100% of the time. And, you know, they're going to have a chip on their shoulder going into this next season, and they've got the talent to definitely make a run. So I would not count them out by any means. All right, next we're going to get into one of my personal favorite teams from this year's playoffs, the Denver Nuggets. I just loved how they progressed through the bubble. Jamal Murray launched himself into the superstar conversation after three impressive series, and Nikola Jokic is an all-star in his own right. And, you know, Michael Porter Jr. displayed some flash, and if all goes right next season, you know, the Nuggets are going to be a dark horse pick to upset the Lakers and the Clippers and get into the finals, right? Like, I just think this roster is very talented. They've got two players who are great at very different things, and I think that counts a lot. You know, you've got the playmaking, you've got the shooting, you've got the defense, and I just think this team needs to keep improving internally and to keep making moves around the fringes, all right? They are almost there.
I'm with you on the dark horse pick. I love the Nuggets. I thought they had a great bubble. Jamal Murray looked amazing. He's a superstar, in my opinion, now after, you know, those three impressive years that he had. I really think the Nuggets are a great team. They always have been a great team, but they never really had that it factor. And I think now that Murray is becoming this superstar and becoming this great player night in, night out, I think their it factor is finally here with Jamal Murray. And who knows, maybe next season they got some great magic in them down the line. Maybe they win the finals. Hopefully. I'm rooting for the Nuggets. So next, let's talk about the media darling of the NBA in the Raptors. And coming off the NBA Finals victory over the Golden State Warriors, they lost Kawhi Leonard in free agency to the Los Angeles Clippers, which definitely for the Raptors, probably heartbreaking. I mean, he comes in for a year, leads you to a championship, and you just leave like that. I'd be pissed off if I was a Raptors fan. But yet, this team continued to churn out victories with their core of VanVleet, Lowry, and Siakam. They look great, I thought, especially in the playoffs, first, second round. I thought they all looked very good. Actually, Siakam didn't look great, but we can get into that later. And to everyone's surprise, the Raptors are once again in great shape heading into next season. I think that VanVleet and Lowry developed very well. They've gelled a lot of players on the bench. Siakam's kind of got to get a little more consistent on the offensive-defensive side. I still think he's an unbelievable player. He's an all-star. But I really would look out for the Raptors in 2021. I thought they looked great in the series against the Celtics. You know, I think the Celtics stole the series from them. I don't think the Celtics deserved to win that. But I thought the Raptors looked really good in the bubble, and I would see some great things out of the Raptors in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, they've got that infrastructure. They've got the great, smart moves from the GM. They've got an incredible coach in Nick Nurse. Holy cow. And at the end of the day, this is the kind of team where you add one big-name player in the offseason, whether it's via trade, whether it's via free agency, and all of a sudden, look out. Oh, my gosh. Like, any superstar would put this team over the top. You don't even need a Kawhi Leonard-type player. You could get a second-tier all-star if you needed to. Someone like Beal, someone like Booker, you know? And just any of those players would totally put this team over the top. And honestly, even without that, they're going to be a contender moving forward 100%. Now, the Los Angeles Clippers, you know, they've just released Doc Rivers. They're currently searching for a new coach and really a new identity after a playoff exit that people really didn't expect. Everyone was calling LA versus LA in the Western Conference Finals. We didn't get that. Paul George simply needs to step up. He's a great player, but he always disappears in the playoffs, and Kawhi cannot carry this team. This team really needs a culture change, and as much as I love Doc Rivers, they do need that fresh, young coach who can get a little bit more creative, who can get the most out of all the pieces in this roster and make this team greater than the sum of their parts.
Yeah, I mean, when I watched the Clippers in the postseason, they really frustrated me. I thought that the Clippers are going to make the finals and most likely win the finals. I think that Paul George and Kawhi Leonard as a core is simply too good not to lose and not to choke in the playoffs. And yet they did. And I love Doc Rivers as a coach, Boston Celtics fan. He was great in Boston. And they really need a young, fresh coach that you mentioned. I mean, they need someone to light a spark in this organization because, you know, 3 or 4 years down the line, Kawhi and PG are going to be out of their primes. Their window is closing. And I think that they need 1 or 2 years of a good young coach, and I think that will really help them in the long run. I think the Clippers should be a title favorite next season. I think they still look very good as a team, but they need that coach. They need that championship mentality in the locker room.
All right, now on to the Milwaukee Bucks. Listen, they need to sign Giannis to a massive extension. I mean, get this man some help. Yes, Chris Middleton is an all-star and a lights-out shooter, but he's simply not enough for the Bucks to reach the NBA Finals. I mean, they need to build around Giannis. He is the centerpiece of this franchise, and that front office really needs to start making some moves. I mean, what if they bring Chris Paul over? Like, that's a possible trade. I mean, it's probably not the most realistic idea in retrospect, but they really could be downright deadly if they pair Chris Paul and Giannis. I mean, I think going into the offseason, the Bucks really need to address the 1-2 punch with Giannis and Chris Middleton. You got to add a third and a fourth and a fifth. They need a really, really solidified starting five if they want to win a title.
I definitely agree with that. Yeah, I mean, just it's that simple. Get Giannis some help, all right? Otherwise, he's going to leave in free agency. I think the rumors are a little overblown. I don't think Giannis is necessarily hungry to go to a big market and kind of pull off that LeBron-esque move. But I do think he wants to win. I think he wants to go to a finals, and I think he wants to get that ring. So if they can't do it for him this year, it's totally going to be up in the air. And Giannis is an incredible player. The Bucks did a great job complimenting him for a really insane regular season, but they just didn't really have that second gear outside of what Giannis was doing when they hit the playoffs. So yeah, you need more playmaking on this team. Simple as that. All right, so Matt, as you and I assume the rest of the viewers know, we have an NBA Finals going on. At the time of recording, the Lakers are up 3-1 against the Heat. And, you know, honestly, I was really happy to see the Heat take a game away from the Lakers without Bam Adebayo, no less. I mean, the Lakers had just been dominating games 1 and 2. The Heat have been missing some key pieces. And it was really great to see Jimmy Butler really step up with that insane 40-point triple-double.
Oh my God,
and steal a game for the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Coming into the series, I really knew that the Lakers were probably going to steamroll the Heat. I mean, the Heat were so good in the first three series of this playoffs, but you really need a superstar if you want to compete with LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and the Lakers. But stealing game three, I mean, I knew that the Heat would probably take 1 or 2 from the Lakers. You know, I mean, this is how it goes, the NBA Finals these days. But, I mean, stealing Game 3, they look good. I thought that the Heat really changed my mind after Game 3. I mean, Jimmy Butler, like you said, just put on an absolute showing. But after Game 4 on Tuesday night, I don't know. I just think that the Lakers are going to steamroll them in Game 5. There's no other way.
This series might very well just be over. I mean, you need more offense from that team. I mean, Tyler Herro was missing shots left and right the other night. And without Goran Dragic, I mean, that's just such a huge chunk of their offense. You really need a 40-point performance from Jimmy Butler to keep pace with the Lakers. And, I mean, Bam Adebayo, great defensive presence. They definitely kept the Lakers in check on the offensive end on the ball. But this team is just, like, what made them tick, what gave them so much success in their awesome run to the finals, it's just not there anymore. And I could see them stealing one more game. I could see them making this a 3-2 type thing. The Lakers are not great at closing out series. The Lakers can take their foot off the gas at times. But yeah, I think this is LA's series to lose at this point. I'm personally going to predict a Lakers in six. I think that the Heat win this next game. They've got that backs against the wall mentality, and they're never going to stop fighting. But then after that, the Lakers are just going to come out and just absolutely shellack them in game six.
Exactly. And I've said it before, if you're staring down LeBron James in the fourth quarter of a final series, that is someone you just don't want to play. I mean, he was dominant on Tuesday night in the fourth quarter. He is determined to win a title for the Lakers. He is very, very, very good in the playoffs. And he's so much experience on his side that I really think that in game five, he is going to have an amazing game. I'm predicting a triple-double, 30-plus points. I really think he's going to lead the Lakers in five games, do a five-game victory.
Yeah, and I think LeBron is going to take that Finals MVP home, really just cement his legacy like that.
Yeah.
All right, so that's all the time we have for today. Thanks, Matt, for joining me once again. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you guys in 2 weeks.
All right, see you later.